Hi, this is Tom Metzger. The program Race and Reason, the oldest running show of its type on cable access TV, seen throughout the country. It's the expression of free speech, total free speech, an island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. The following interview is the only such interview in existence with the wife of martyred white separatist Robert J. Matthews. Matthews was the leader of an aborted uprising against federal tyranny and illegitimate government in Washington, D.C. The group Matthews led was known as the Bruderschweigen, or Silent Brotherhood. The order was very loosely pictured in the film Betrayed. Most white nationalists in the United States, or at least many, have good women behind them, and it would be impossible to do the jobs that they do without them. And so, Debbie, where did you hail from? Have you lived around here all your life?
No, I was born and raised in Kansas.
In Kansas. And where did you meet Bob?
I met him in Jackson, Wyoming.
Jackson, Wyoming, and he was, what, working in the oil fields or something?
No, he came down to meet me.
He came down to meet. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Oh, we'd been riding for about a year.
I see. And that was...
I was working in Jackson, and he came down to meet me. That was in late 75.
I see. Was Bob, did he ever... Was he politically active much at the time, or was he...
Not at that time.
Not at that time.
He had been when he was in Phoenix, and...
I see. I heard that he... got mad at the IRS and resisted the tax thing like many of us have done.
Yeah, he was arrested in Phoenix when he was 20.
By the IRS?
By the IRS.
Many of the people who watch this program or watch and know that the work we do are tax rebels, who have been tax rebels, trying to straighten this country out, so... And it's interesting that some of the people who have been the greatest activists in the country have really taken the bull by the horns, per se, and made the greatest sacrifice of people who started out as tax rebels and not some kind of, armchair patriot or the people...
That's a good term.
Yeah, the people that read the books and... never really get anything accomplished, except maybe if they threw the books at somebody, maybe they could accomplish something. Well, were you going together during that period that he had problems with the IRS? Or?
No. He started in the movement when he was 15, mm-hmm. and joined the John Birch Society and then the Young Americans for Freedom, and then went up to the tax rebellion movement.
You know, that's the same trip that I took.
Is it?
Yes, I started basically in an anti-communist study program at Douglas Aircraft back in the early 60s. And then I evolved into the Birch Society. And then I got bored with the Birch Society, got into the tax rebellion, and right on, the same path. It's very interesting.
Well, after he was arrested, nobody came to his aid then after he'd... He'd been in the movement about 5 years, and he got pretty fed up with the sheep that the American people had become, and decided to just move up here and
develop a new life.
Yeah, develop a new life and try to live peacefully.
Yes, to try to just sort of get the government out of his hair once and for all. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all had that feeling, and a lot of us have moved all over the place trying to get Big Brother out of our hair, but he seems like he just follows you and torments you no matter where you go.
Yeah, it did. It lasted for about 3 years, and then...
I know what you mean. Now, I understand that you and Bob cleared this land.
Yes, it was all forest when he bought it.
About 53 acres of really beautiful, and it was all forest.
This was his dream, to live up here and raise a large family.
Sure, sure. Well, we've had Gordon call. Now we've got Robert Matthews. There's been quite a few others, people like John Singer over in Utah, remember, that was shot down. There's been farmers and that have resisted the banks and the government seizing their property that have been shot down. Actually, there's been hundreds and hundreds that really have been brutalized by the government of the United States over the past few years with very little notice by the public in general. I believe they're making a dent, don't you?
I think so.
I know they are. Talking to a lot of people that I do on the street and doing our television show.
I know that Bob's death wasn't in vain.
That's for sure.
From all the letters I've received, I know that it sparked a fire.
Of course it did.
And I don't think it'll be extinguished
until
we have ultimate victory.
It seems like systems that are oppressive always do make the same mistakes. They think that they can stamp on people and or murder them and it's all going to be over. But I remember a famous line from the film Viva Zapata, which was a film about a very effective Mexican revolutionary in Mexico. And they went after him with everything they had to get him, and they finally shot him through with thousands of holes one day, and the one army general said, well, that's the end of that. And the other older general said, no, I think that's just the beginning. A dead man can be a very terrible enemy.
And I think that's what's happening here.
Of course it is. From what I can see from the people I talk to around the country, no matter what kind of vilification the paid news people get involved in as far as trying to besmirch Bob's name, the word is out that he, alongside of Gordon Call, have become heir apparent as Minutemen in a new revolution against the system of the United States. It seems to me just as almost the same as the original revolution was in 1776.
I've received letters from all over Europe attesting to people believing the same as Bob did and giving me their support, knowing that his fight will keep going even in Europe.
Well, that's another thing, too. It seems to go beyond national boundaries. I notice that a tremendous amount of Canadians feel the same way, and South Africans and Australians, and there seems to be a coming together. I know in our mail and in the various magazines that are being put out there, they're not just conservative and so-called right-wing necessarily anymore. They're coming to a real racial understanding of a struggle against despotism. And the national borders seem to be crumbling on this issue, probably meaning that Bob was in the vanguard of an ideology of new politics that's going to take over, that has to take over. I think, was Bob into, how do you feel about ecology and conservation? And obviously, if he had this ranch here, he must have loved the outdoors and nature.
He loved animals. We had a pack rat in the storage shed. And he couldn't bear to kill it. He had to live trap it and take it off into the woods. And, of course, it came back within a few days.
Sure.
And he had to do it all over again.
But well, that...
He wouldn't allow hunting on the land, and he couldn't bear to hunt himself.
Mm-hmm. I know how he felt, because I know when I was young, I used to hunt a lot. And as I got older, I lost the taste for hunting. Yeah, settling in this beautiful valley like this would really bring it home how he wanted to be attuned with nature. And it's amazing, too, and he gets no credit whatsoever, that when he was being pursued, it would have been very easy for him to kill an FBI agent, but yet he willfully did not, because he did not want to have to take a life. That the kept and bought press do not like to talk about. if they tell all the good things that we know about Bob, he'd become a hero even much faster across the country, don't you think?
He certainly would.
Yeah. Well, what about Clint, your boy? You think Clint's going to grow up a scrapper, too?
I hope so.
Carry on the condition or the...
He's going to be an Aryan warrior, just like his father.
Good. Good. Well, there's been a lot of other people that have been hounded and hurt. There's a lot of them in jail right now. It looks to me probably like as time goes on in the United States, some of the best people in the United States are going to be inside the prisons. Who are they going to have to run the country?
They'll have to be run inside the prisons.
Right. On the trip up here on the plane, I was talking to a man from Utah that had worked in the prisons, and we were talking about the fact that the most honest people he had run into, in many cases, were inside the prisons. He said the hypocrites, there were so many hypocrites on the outside. Well, the tax movement, the tax rebel movement, the white nationalist movement, there's the identity movement, all this would seem to me to be melding together finally into at least an overall movement. Do you think so?
I think so. Bob would have liked to have seen that. We're all fighting for the same cause, and I don't like to see, you know, little differences keep us apart.
Right. And what happened? They really pushed the button on him up here. The IRS pursue him up here? Was that, did they bother him here on the job?
The first job he had, they tried to get him fired. Mm-hmm. Then they pretty much left him alone.
I see.
But the more Bob read, the more he knew he had to continue the fight. He couldn't stay still for long.
It's amazing, too, that within 15 miles of us here, it's even worse in Canada, which we've always thought is a neighbor Aryan nation. More Aryan than our nation, to be perfectly honest about it. But the repression that goes on in Canada is even worse than the United States.
Oh, definitely. They fly in whole airplane loads of packies into Vancouver daily, from what I've heard.
And, of course, we're near the Mexican border in Southern California. And we have, of course, millions of illegal Mexicans coming in, and Orientals, to where now the 20-30% of the outlying cities in L.A. are Oriental now, and they've built their own Vietnamese town, Chinatown, you name it. And so, in a way, this is proving that their racial mixing theories don't work, because people do naturally segregate no matter what. I never had the opportunity to meet Bob, but I feel a very close feeling that we were thinking along a lot of the same lines over the years, and I think we've read a lot of the same books. And I think that the evolution that he made from conservative to the Birch Society on into a white nationalist through the tax rebel is the route that many people are taking. Many, many people. And there's so many people in the tax rebellion movement that are spending time in jail that they haven't yet got up the next level and become white nationalists, a lot of them. Have you run into some of these people?
Oh, of course. A lot.
Yeah.
And they think they can fight the government on their level.
And they find out pretty soon
that they can't.
And they try to use the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And I think that Bob would have agreed the Constitution for white working class in this country is deader than a doornail.
Yes. And there's no way you can vote it back in.
It doesn't seem so. I've run for office, and it's not that I expected to win at the first time round, but when you realize the tremendous amount of money that's put up against you, and a tremendous pressure by minority groups and Zionists, and the problems within the white racial community itself, so divided on these issues, it surely seems very difficult for any kind of ballot box solution. That, let's say at best, it has to be part of it. And of course, I predicted this for years, that it would come to this point, to where, in which it is in many other parts of the world, where there's the political activists doing everything they can, and then people who are frustrated to the point where they become violent. You don't talk to the press too much, do you?
No.
I don't blame you. I don't talk to them either very much.
Whatever you say, they turn it around.
Isn't that something? If you were to read the stories you read about Bob in a newspaper, you wouldn't even know it was the same man.
He was such a hard-working, industrious, a good man. And they try to portray him as this horrid Nazi criminal.
Yes. And everybody now is a neo-Nazi. You
yes.
notice that?
Well, I asked one reporter about it because I told him it, because Bob wasn't a neo-Nazi. And he
yeah.
said they use it just because it's short and it fits in the headlines. It didn't matter what the man was.
Well, I've noticed in just the last few months that now that has almost taken the lead of everything. Anybody that is white nationalist and militant at all is a neo-Nazi. And I had a newspaper man ask me the other day about that, and I said, I don't care anymore what they call me. They've called me so many names anyhow. I don't care anymore. I mean, if I sit around worrying about that, I wouldn't get anything done. So, well, do you intend to stay here in the valley?
Yes, I certainly do.
And you're going to handle this big farm?
Well, I'm going to try.
Well, you've got some help. You've got some family here in the area, sure.
And well, I'm pretty resourceful. I could.
Right. I hear you get up to, 5 foot of snow around here this winter, huh?
Pretty. Everything comes to a halt in the wintertime.
How do you get rid of the snow?
Well, I have a snow plow. A plow on the end of the tractor.
And you handle a tractor?
Mm-hmm.
Do you chop
it? Not well, but I do.
Have you chopped any of the trees?
No, I haven't done that yet. I tried this winter to start up a chainsaw, but I couldn't do it. I'm going to have somebody show me how.
Clint's not quite big enough. He's growing fast, though.
Yes. Hopefully in a couple of years he can start handling some of the chores.
Well, I saw a sign when I was coming in. Was Bob going to raise a certain type of animal here or something?
We were raising Galloways, registered Galloways.
What's a Galloway?
Galloway is it's the breed that the Black Angus was bred from. It's an old Scottish breed.
I see.
And they're for a cold, wet climate. They've got they look like a Black Angus, only they have a real heavy, curly coat.
Well, where do they come from? Do they import those?
Several people. They're popular up in Canada and North Dakota, and they're gradually becoming a lot more popular.
Do you think you're going to have any here?
Well, we sold them all off last year, and hopefully I'd like to bring them back.
Yes. Yeah. Do you ever get totally snowed in here?
I haven't yet.
You know what this reminds me of? I travel in Europe and Germany and Austria and places like that. It reminds me a lot of those places.
Oh, does it?
And I think maybe that's why Bob was so attracted to it. It's the Northman, and the Norse type, the Germanic type territory. You could.
He felt completely at home up here. It was his private little haven, he'd call it, his little heaven.
It reminds me a lot of Berchtesgaden in southern Germany.
Does it?
Yes.
I see that.
And it's almost like there's genetic memory among white men of these ancient lands where we used to live. And we try to find them again here in the United States and North America.
Isn't it in us to live a rural life?
I think so. I live in a rural area. I'm not living too much of a rural life, but having been raised on a small farm in Indiana, I do get these itches sometimes, you know, to get back. But
I don't think our people were meant to live in cities.
The cities of today are obviously dying, or at least the inner core of the cities. What amazes me in traveling throughout California, and even up in these areas, in the bigger towns even, they all look alike. It's all the Coca-Cola Society with the streets, the billboards, the Kentucky Fried Chicken, just masses of signs, and you're in one town and you could just as well be in a state, you know, 300 miles away or 1,000 miles away. They all look the same. Do you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find that true in Medellin Falls, though.
What'd you notice different?
Well, it takes me back to the rural small town, the older storefronts, the mom-and-pop restaurant, the one little theater.
That's even closed.
And that's closed. Television. The satellites are probably putting it out. But quiet. I was noticing here on Saturday afternoon that it was almost like Sunday morning in a little town. And I watched the little kids riding the bicycles up and down the street and having so much fun. And in the cities, we have to lock them all up, or people live in the bigger cities. You can't have a kid run around town hardly at all.
They're afraid of being taken, aren't they?
Yes. I mean, there's thousands of young little, especially little white kids that are stolen every year right off the street. But you could see where the kids were playing in Medellin Falls. They were oblivious to any. There was no danger there.
Except there's no crime.
No crime.
Because we're an all-white area.
And afraid, and the only thing they worry about is the kids falling in the river or something.
Yes.
Floating away. So, do you ever have the animals come up around?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have deer?
Deer usually come out into the pasture every evening to eat. And we've had elk come.
Yeah. Anything?
We've had bear, but not since we've lived here.
I see. How about wolves?
No wolves. There's been a mountain lion at the end of the road once, but...
Did Bob ever get any pictures of the animals coming in like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That must be something. That must be something.
It's gotten so common that the dogs don't even bark at them anymore. They just look up and see them out there and just go back to sleep.
Get along with them, huh?
Uh-huh.
Don't bug each other at all.
No.
Well... It's been very nice talking to you, Debbie.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
I'm sure there's a million things we'll think of that we could have talked about after we quit here, but I did want the hundreds of thousands of white nationalists around the United States and in other countries to get a little bit of an intimate look at the strength behind Robert Matthews and even for people who don't agree, they're going to have to look and say, gee, these are people just like us, and
that's right.
Looking for to get the government off their back and out of their business and have their privacy or trying to straighten out the system a little bit to where we don't have to be afraid to walk down the street. To where maybe Bob's idea was to make every city in the United States as crime-free as Medellin Falls.
Oh, he would have loved to have seen that.
Maybe that's where the blueprint came in his mind.
It might have been.
Well, maybe sometime we can talk again.
Oh, I'd like that. And I appreciate you coming up.
And I appreciate you letting us talk to you this afternoon. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Robert J. Matthews, at the time of his death, was not well known. He held no political office and had never been a talk show guest or host. In death, Robert J. Matthews is known nationwide and worldwide as a symbol of resistance and bravery. Beginning December 8, 1988, the anniversary of his murder will take place with an all-night vigil on Whidbey Island near Seattle, Washington, and continue in years to come. As the popular song says, "Good morning, America, how are you? I'm your favorite son." To our treasonous regime in Washington, we can only say, a dead man can be a terrible enemy. In the years to come, the regime in Washington and its Jewish co-conspirators will attempt to cut off, suppress, and in some cases, kill any opposition to their criminal enterprise. In George Orwell's great story, Animal Farm, the satire of so-called equality is trashed when the deposed farm animals finally get the message that all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. Again, political prophet Orwell in 1984 paints the picture of our present state of affairs, devoted to newspeak, the memory hole, and the thought police. It is not coming, it is here. And Robert Matthews gave his life in a last appeal for you, white America, to fight or die. We of Race and Reason hope his death was not in vain.